Welcome. High scoring games in the Bundesliga after the international break. Bayern Munich dominated Borussia Dortmund in the Classica. Was that the last straw for Peter Stöger? Cologne were trounced in their loss to Hoffenheim. How much did that affect their survival chances? And we discuss the seemingly annual rise of Werder Bremen. Where will it lead this time? This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis van Opdorp here with Jonathan Harding and Matt Ford. Jonathan, take us through the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 28. Gymnastics and Sports Society, 1899 Hoffenheim, 6. First Football Club of Cologne, 0. Football Club Schalke, 0-4. 2. Sport Club Freiburg, 0. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football, 0. Football Club Augsburg, 0. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 2. Lawnball Sport Leipzig, 3. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart, 1. Hamburger Sport Club, 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 6. Ballgame Sport Prussia 09 Dortmund, 0. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 0. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 0. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 2. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 1. First Football Club of Mainz 05, 0. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach, 0.
All right, so we have 2-6-0 results that we definitely have to discuss this week. Matt was saying just before we aired that basically the most likely two results were 6-0 and 0-0 this week.
What a league to watch.
Definitely, to say the least, a huge result for Bayern Munich before the Champions League tie, and we'll get to that in a second. But I think the first thing we have to ask is, if you're Borussia Dortmund, what do you do with this result? Because they looked second best since the opening whistle, and they never really got into the game. Now, do you take it and just dismiss it, or what do you do with it?
They were absolutely torn apart, weren't they? From the get-go, absolutely no grip at all in midfield. The defence, which we know has been Dortmund's problematic area all season, really, absolutely no way of handling Müller, Lewandowski and James, and the latter, James, was particularly impressive, absolutely ran the show, especially in the opening half an hour, 40 minutes. It just really proved, if it hadn't been proved already, what an incredibly massive gap there is. And there are mitigating circumstances in the Dortmund. There are various issues there, and John wrote a good piece, pretty much listing with the 5 or 6 key issues that Dortmund have to deal with, and I think they're all valid, they're all equal. I think we've discussed them all at various points on the podcast, whether it's the ongoing psychological effects of the bus attack, whether it's the defensive instability, whether it's the decision making process within the hierarchy, whether it's having to sell the best players, the list goes on. And yeah, what do Dortmund do with that? I think it was concerning that whatever Peter Stöger's plan was before the game, and he only said that, well, we're not going to go 5 at the back like we did in the cup game because that didn't serve us any good. Well, yeah, in hindsight, surely it would have served you a bit better than being 5-0 down. Was it 4 or 5 at half time? You lose count. Yeah, and then afterwards, thought even stranger from Peter Stöger's point of view was that he almost seemed to analyse the game in his post-match interviews with a sort of quite objective detachedness, as if he wasn't actually part of it. It definitely demonstrated the sort of detachedness, I thought. He was saying things like, this gives us as a club another piece of evidence as to where we are and what we need to build on, what the club needs to build on, and what the club needs to discuss in the summer. And then he was asked, obviously, well, is that going to include you as coach? And he goes, yeah, of course, the coach's job comes into consideration. But as if he was viewing it as a third person, not that this is his job, his responsibility, his players, his team, his tactics. So I thought that was very strange. It seems that he's thrown in the towel already. I wrote a rather speculative piece before the game saying that if Dortmund could have got some sort of result out of that, or even just a good performance, then it might have been a little bit of evidence to say, oh, well, look, Peter Stöger can make this step up from Cologne and manage a big club, a club at least is considered big. But yeah, there didn't even seem to be an attempt on Dortmund's part to go and win that game. And the list of issues goes on at Dortmund. They've already made, I suppose, tentative baby steps at some sort of new start by bringing in Matthias Sammer as an external advisor. I think me and you discussed at the weekend, Davis, and we're not particularly sure what exactly that role entails. We will see.
Yeah, we'll discuss that a little bit later. But I want to stick on this game still. It's Peter Stöger is a interesting point because he has normally played five of the black back, even if he was at coaching Cologne against Bayern Munich. And like Matt said, this would have been a big result to kind of sell to not just the board, but also to Dortmund fans.
Just a performance would have been something.
So where does this leave Peter Stöger? Does he always have to talk in this omnipotent tone about his job and the club that he currently works for?
Peter Stöger won't be manager of Borussia Dortmund next
absolutely
season.
Absolutely no chance.
Was that already clear?
Yes, that was already clear, I think, before this game. And I think, if you look, was it 12 games unbeaten? I think a lot of those games, Borussia Dortmund fans will be wondering how they went unbeaten in those games.
Well, there were late equalisers, late winners.
And the Frankfurt game comes to mind. I mean, that should have been a draw, if not even a defeat, by the way, just on the performance basis. I mean, there were a lot of games there that Borussia Dortmund should not have got good results in. And that they even went into Munich undefeated under him was a surprise. And I think if you just watch the performances in the last few weeks, then this result was coming. They could have been on a similar hiding if they'd played another side in the league anywhere near Bayern's quality. But as we know, they are the only side in this league able to produce that quality consistently. And yeah, Borussia Dortmund have a lot of questions to ask. And you know, I did write about it and the reasons why they are where they are now. I think the biggest question going forward, looking at Stöger's exit in the summer and what they're going to do, is senior players, who goes? Is it time to make those changes for the sake of the dressing room, for the sake of the future? And identity.
Senior players as in Smeltzer and Piszczek and those leaders?
Yeah,
Piszczek
came out this week and said that he intends to retire at the club. And I thought that was interesting that Borussia Dortmund's response was, well, of course. Well, actually, if Lukas Piszczek is your starting right back, he's not good enough to be your starting right back. I think he's been a great servant for the club. But if you're dropping your standards as a club to accommodate players, in this case, that are not good enough, that's a huge problem. Is Marcel Schmelzer the best left back that Borussia Dortmund could have? No. They'll probably try and get Jonas Hector in the summer, and that's an improvement. Is Lukas Piszczek the best option? At 32, with no hips, I don't think that's a good idea. I'm not taking anything away from the 400 games that he's played for the club, right? That's not what we're talking about. But Dortmund need to ask themselves those big questions. And they don't need to just ask them. They need to answer them. What is the identity of this club? What type of football do they want to play? Do they want to develop young players? Or do they want to get into the Champions League? Because at the moment, you can't do both. And they are suffering under the expectation that they are putting on terribly young players who are not quite at the skill level to consistently be a side that's in the Champions League.
Speaking of his tie that's consistently in the Champions League, Bayern Munich showed exactly why they're in the Champions League, and they are in the Champions League this week, and their performance, of course, after an international break as well. They play Sevilla on Tuesday, and Sevilla also had an impressive performance against Barcelona, but in terms of just looking at, we're not going to try to analyze Sevilla right now, but looking at Bayern Munich's performance, is this something that they can take? Is this a performance that they can take into the Champions League?
Massively, in terms of confidence. And I think the biggest thing out of this for them was the performance of players like Hammers. Matt just talked about him. For me, Thomas Müller was incredible. He just came off an okay international break with Germany. But we just talked on the last pod when we talked about the Germany team. Who would you play? How would we play? And I thought this was a great case in evidence of why you play Thomas Müller on the right, or why you can. I mean, he was phenomenal. His touch, the touch in, I think it was to Robin in the box, or Ribery in the box, that then produces the sixth goal, I think, in the second half.
There was Kimmich.
Yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. You know, and his sense of, it feels like his sense of space is back a bit. You know, he didn't, not that he'd lost it, but that's back. And Bayern, what better way to prepare for a Champions League game than to beat the second best team in Germany by 6-0?
We watched this together. How surprised were you, Matt, that Bayern Munich were so dominant in this game, considering that even though John raised good points about the opponents that Dortmund had played, but the Dortmund were unbeaten under Peter Stöger, and Peter Stöger in the past has given Bayern Munich a hard time.
As frustrating as it was watching it, and I think me and you were both, I think we were both pretty frustrated watching it, because obviously we're all, you're looking at, you know, two of the biggest clubs in Germany, and you want a game out of it. Obviously, it's been marketed in recent years as a classicer, which I think to view it through that lens is false, because up until 2012 or 13, the Bundesliga's marketing men hadn't invented Der Klassiker, so the whole thing is a bit of a misnomer anyway. However, was it frustrating? Yeah, but was it surprising? In hindsight, no. The previous two league games there, they lost 4-1 and 5-1. As we said, the results under Peter Stöger so far, as much as they were unbeaten, this was coming. I was going to say maybe not a 6-0, but yeah, well, actually, why not? There've been games where Roman Bürki has kept them in it for ages. I mean, one springs to mind. I was at the Gladbach game when Dortmund played them, and Bürki pulled off 3 or 4 great saves. Otherwise, it could quite conceivably have ended 3 or 4-1 to Mönchengladbach on that day. And that's just one example. So no, I wasn't surprised. not one bit. No, in hindsight.
Yeah, I mean, the movement that the big thing that surprised me was, there was definitely a real intent from Bayern Munich's part. There's been games where Bayern Munich have played recently, since considering the title race has been no motivating factor whatsoever, that they, when it comes to trying to win the ball back, they have been less than willing to do so. But when you see Mats Hummels stepping up into midfield to take the ball away from Batshuayi to keep the chance alive, that's stuff that you saw under Pep Guardiola when they made it to the semifinals of the Champions League 3 years in a row. Is the effort still going to be there? Do we now believe that this effort is something that they can call upon when they feel like they're up for it?
I mean, it's a perfect time to hit your form in that regard. I mean, we're just at the beginning of April. The season is reaching the so-called business end. You know, they have wrapped up the league and they're 17 points clear. Like, they're going to win it next weekend. So that means that Sandro Wagner can look forward to, I don't know, 6 games, 5 games in a row, basically.
Every week.
Building up to a World Cup, which is great for him if he wants to be selected. In terms of Bayern, though, what better time is there to have that system where you're reaching those peak level of efforts, where you're stepping up and pressing, and where you're really offering the best version of your playing ability, not just as an individual, but as a collective. The question is, though, was this more a case of Bayern was so good or Dortmund was so bad? Because as great as Bayern were, and they were ruthless, it wasn't like we haven't seen Bayern be that ruthless before. You talked about that time under Pep Guardiola. I mean, they did that a lot during his time in charge. But Dortmund offered Bayern an awful lot of space. And the capitulation in midfield, I don't think I can remember the last time I watched a game, let alone a game between these two, just a game where I was still catching up with the replay and the goal that had just gone when Ribery went and scored.
Mm.
I was still in the, okay, I'm just noting down what's happened here. And then
the Germany 7-1 semi-final.
Yeah, exactly. That was the last time.
It was on that sort of
level. 4 years ago, you know, and I think that's the kind of performance you just can't allow yourself from a Dortmund perspective. It's not to take anything away from Bayern, who are, as you say, approaching the perfect type of a form at the perfect time in the season.
I mean, the fact that they're able to do that, I think I want to give so much credit to the fact that Jupp Heynckes and Peter Hermann and their team I mean, this is a team, they've effectively got nothing left to play for in the league, and yet they're able to pull up that sort of performance. You highlighted the aggression and the with which they went into their, well, went about their pressing. And that's, yeah, that's down to Heinkes and Hermann's man management there. And yeah, I think that deserves huge credit, especially because you have got key games which they can't afford to slip up at all. Against Sevilla and then later on should they progress, but we even saw the Besiktas away tie, it was over anyway, and yet they still went for it and were ruthless and went straight for the throat.
I mean, those three,
that's hugely impressive.
Jupp Heynckes, Peter Hermann and Herman Gelland, those three have been working together for so many years, and it is the best piece of evidence, or they are the best piece of evidence for why coaches take the people that they know, because it so often makes a huge difference to the outcome on the pitch.
Yeah. So I asked that question because you as you mentioned, John, they can win the title just with a victory next week. So they're going to basically play six exhibition games the rest of the way. So neither of you, it sounds like, seem worried at all that they will be able to call upon their best performance when they need it.
I think we mentioned a few weeks ago that it's always a question that you have to ask. Like, will it have a negative effect on the tournaments where they are still competing? Will they be able to call up those performances and that intensity? It's a question that you have to ask. And on the evidence so far, it's a question that they're answering pretty satisfactorily.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, let's go to the next 6-0.
How many times are you going to say that?
Well, it's the last time on this podcast.
Goals galore,
sure.
apart from the 3-0-0s.
That was obviously Hoffenheim's result against Cologne, as you heard from the beginning. Much more demoralizing for Cologne, possibly, than it was maybe for Dortmund, because Cologne are fighting to stay in the division. Now, Matt, you and I both, a few weeks ago, talked about Cologne as someone who could possibly, maybe, convert the miracle comeback and be able to get over either Mainz or Wolfsburg. What did you take out of Cologne's performance first?
Absolutely nothing. There was nothing to take, was there, right from minute one? But I think it needs to be pointed out.
But was it demoralizing, basically, to see the way that Cologne were playing, even though they were already down
3-0? That's the biggest defeat. The fact that they lost isn't the end of the world in Cologne's in their relegation battle. They could have afforded to lose that 1-0, 2-0, and then they still got Mainz at home next week, which is an immensely important game. The fact that it was the man with the defeat and collapsing the way they did, giving the ball away in midfield the way they did, absolutely having no answer to Gnabry and Mark Oots. You felt sorry for Timo Horn constantly. Yeah, spent more time picking the ball out of his net, and they had absolutely no answer to it. I felt slightly sorry for Vincent Cossiello in the middle, who's been so impressive since he joined Cologne, and yet he's...
Two bad mistakes from him.
He's just overrun.
Heavy, heavy mistakes, and they couldn't compete. And it's worrying that they collapsed the way they did. Although, like I said, the result in itself isn't bad. Even the goal difference, I don't think, can play an issue anyway. So, but it's just the manner of it, and they need to. I think Rutenbeck has said since that I'm not talking about it. Move on, and that's probably all they can do. Just completely forget it. Move on, because there's very little to say about it.
Yeah, there is. I mean, this is reminiscent of Hamburg's when Hamburg were able to survive. Reminiscent of their trips to Munich when they would lose 8-0. like you said, this isn't really the end of the world for them, because like you said, they could have lost this game 1 or 2-0, and it was very, and Mainz and Wolfsburg also didn't win their matches. So it's not like it's not still impossible for them to do it. But Jonathan, do you agree that the way that they lost is very, very worrying for Cologne's survival hopes?
Absolutely. The psychological impact of that on that team is, as Matt says, is going to be huge. That game against Mainz now is just so, so important. And actually, looking at Mainz, they played an okay performance against Gladbach. They delivered an okay performance. It wasn't anything special. But I think it says an awful lot that Mainz on the weekend, after that match day, look more likely to get a result out of Cologne now than they did 2 weeks ago before the international break, when Cologne had just beaten Leverkusen and everyone was saying the miracle's on, you know, and Mainz were looking terrible. It's funny what a break will do for you, because Mainz didn't look so bad yesterday. They had their moments, but now Cologne came out of that break, all that time to prepare for this game, where you'd be thinking, okay, we can lose this 1 or 2 nil, but maybe we can snatch a draw.
The likes of Bissoukou and Osako back from injury as awful. Well. You thought, like, this is the time to kick on.
And use that positive momentum. Yeah, okay, you've had to wait a little bit for it, but you've just won the derby, right? I mean, it's going to take...
I think Ruth and Beck's response to it, I think that's
the best way to approach it.
From a psychological point of view, is all you can do. Forget it, never happened, move on, because in terms of the actual relegation battle, there are more important fixtures to come. I don't know how else you can respond to that. There's no point dwelling on it. They've got, six, seven games to go?
Yeah, six.
There's no point dwelling on the psychological issues of getting beaten like that. Just forget it, move on.
And the one thing I'd say if I was Ruthenbeck would be, you've still got to play Mainz and I think Freiburg and maybe Wolfsburg.
And Wolfsburg away
so,
on
I mean,
the final day.
At that point, you know, you could have lost 10-0 to Hoffenheim. It's still very, very much in Cologne's hands. If they win all three of those games.
I mean, so we have to also give credit to Hoffenheim, because they did really...
Superb.
They were ruthless
as well. But Jonathan, you mentioned this before we went on, that the two players that contributed the most in Serge Gnabry and Marc Uth will not be there next season.
No, they won't.
We talked last week a little bit about the coaching carousels going on at Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. And obviously Julian Nagelsmann is one of those names that came up in both of those clubs. And also there was a report last week that from Sportbild that RB Leipzig, if they lose Ralf Hasenhüttl, could be a destination for Julian Nagelsmann. If you're Julian Nagelsmann, though, and you know that these players are leaving next season, how do you see your coaching? I'm not trying to get you to think like Julian Nagelsmann, but how do you see your coaching situation? Because it could be the second summer in a row where your best players are no longer in the team.
I think you have to approach it fairly pragmatically. I think if he gets the chance to coach a big club, then...
Well, let's not make any bones about it. We've already talked about how Hoffenheim is a stop on the motorway.
Absolutely, but if he gets the chance, and by that I mean Dortmund or Bayern or whatever it is. I mean, I don't think it will be Bayern, but Leipzig are not a big club. They are in many ways the same as Hoffenheim, but he will get the chance to play in Europe. And I know for a fact, reading many of his interviews, that he wants to win the Champions League. As a coach, that's one of his ambitions. He's not going to get there with Hoffenheim. He's come pretty close, absolutely. But as is the nature of the Bundesliga, Hoffenheim are just an example, you can't retain your best players for very long these days. And Marc Uth is going to Schalke, where he will be playing in Europe. Serge Gnabry is going back to Bayern to be their third choice winger, because it's Bayern Munich. Does Julian Nagelsmann have it in him to then go scouting and finding all over again to get the right players to rebuild again? Maybe he needs one more year to do that. Maybe he wants to push Hoffenheim on one more year. But it depends where they finish this season. You know, if they get into the Europa League, I'm convinced he'll stay unless he gets a better offer. And then go into do that European campaign next season and have a better stab at it. Make some good signings in the summer and see where he's at next season. I think he'd quite like to win something there. So not just to say I had a good time here and I've developed all these players and I've taken the club forward, but I also won something. Because if you look at all these young coaches that eventually get somewhere in Germany, they are the winners. You know, Hannes Wolf won at youth level. Tedesco's the exception to that because he's the anomaly. But most of these guys win.
Arguably saving Erzgebirg at our the way he did
is a victory. But they tend to win titles. They tend to win trophies, right? And I think Nagelsmann wants to do that at Hoffenheim. But as I say, if he gets a better offer, and I consider Leipzig in that regard a better offer because they are going to be a...
European side.
Unless he can get there with Hoffenheim... he might even want the Leipzig job just for the better quality of player.
It's an interesting one with Hoffenheim. I think we've said before that the whole purpose of the club is whatever Dietmar Hopp wants it to be.
He's not like some other owners that are or investors that are in other parts of German football. I mean, I think
He's not in it for any personal or financial gain out of it. He's in it because well, he's in it because he wants to build a club in his local region, and he's the model for success that he's built it on so far has involved not only a good scouting system, but also bringing these young talents into a particularly, I'd say, quite data heavy and sports science heavy environment,
mm-hmm.
Which Julian Nagelsmann is absolutely perfectly suited to, and he's exactly the right coach to have on hand to get the best out of the technological facilities which Dietmar Hopp and, you know, being a co-founder of SAP, it's no surprise that the Chinese under 21 11 or Olympic 11 was going to play in the Regional League Southwest. It's because a lot of the technological connections were to do with SAP, and there's a lot of interest from China in there, and it's a huge employer and a huge huge business in the area, and all these things come together at Hoffenheim. Is that enough to move Hoffenheim onto a level where a coach like Julian Nagelsmann could be convinced to stay? We saw last season that they struggled. First of all, they had very little chance against Liverpool in the Champions League qualifier, and I thought they performed hugely underwhelmingly in the Europa League under Nagelsmann. If they end up in the Europa League again at the end of this season, which isn't impossible, I think they're up to seventh now. So that's not impossible. But I think they're going to be in an even worse state in terms of the squad to compete in the Europa League next season. That can only change if Dietmar Hopp is prepared to increase level of investment, so that the sort of players they bring in, they aren't just obliged to sell them on to the highest bidder after just a couple of years. Whether Dietmar Hopp intends to do that, I've no idea.
I can imagine
he can
keep Nagelsmann there, though.
Yeah, and the two of them have a great working relationship. The two of them get on very well. Nagelsmann loves the trust that he has and the independence that he has. Like I said, and the technological environment that he's working in suits him brilliantly as well. Is that going to be enough? And I think that'll be the question for Julian Nagelsmann at the end of the day, because whether it's a Red Bull who come knocking, who I think would offer him a relatively similar challenge, albeit with arguably greater ambitions, because they certainly have ambitions to be a permanent fixture in the Champions League. I can see that being attractive to him.
You get all the technological advancements that he gets at Hoffenheim there.
Absolutely.
As well. So,
yeah. I think it's also interesting that you see, I mean, Leipzig's even targeting some of the Hoffenheim players as some of the young players that they want to bring in. And similar strategies, but it also is kind of a sign that Leipzig is the bigger club when it comes to those two. I think that Julian Nagelsmann going to Leipzig, even though, I mean, disregarding all of the fan protests that are going behind it, in terms of the actual team, the actual structure there, it would be a good step for him to go, especially if someone like Ralf Hasenhüttl leaves. And I mean, he might be able to even do more than Ralf Hasenhüttl did at Leipzig. That's going a little bit too far, maybe. But
I think you have the chance to take the team further along. I think Hasenhüttl is one of those coaches. Well, especially at Leipzig, he'll have. Hasenhüttl was always, it's Ranić's thing. I mean, Matt said this last week, it's Ranić's baby, so whoever comes in still has to answer to him. But I think Hasenhüttl is approaching that time where he's done as much as he can within the framework that he's been given. Nagelsmann is a new face, a new mind. I think that would work well for Leipzig, but his primary concern will be trying to get the most out of that team without Keita.
None of us are in any doubt as to what the purpose of Red Bull Leipzig is, the reasons to why they're there. It's all obvious what ambitions they have and what they want to stand for. They have ambitions to be this constantly young, constantly exciting, constantly go aggressive, pressing, just like everything else that Red Bull get involved in. And in many respects, Nagelsmann, having worked on the Ranić before as well, would arguably and theoretically suit them slightly better going forward than Ralf Hasenhüttl, as good a job as he has done so far.
But he would have to solve the biggest problem, which would be a midfield without Naby Keita.
So now it's time for the Shout from Rosette section. Thank you all again for voting. We did a little bit of a quicker poll this time around because we know it's Easter weekend and there's just not, people just don't have a lot of time. So we tried to get a little bit more attention in a shorter amount of time. But the topic you guys picked was an interesting one, which is the fact that Werder Bremen, who defeated Frankfurt at the weekend, has the second best form in the last five games of any team in the Bundesliga. And that's very, very remarkable. Of course, they had a similar form last season in the second half of last season under Alexander Nuri. And now that Florian Kohfeldt has taken over for Nuri, it seems to be happening again. Jonathan, you said off air that you were rather impressed by them against Frankfurt, even though Frankfurt, of course, made some errors in the game.
Yeah, definitely. Werder Bremen attacked the game, and I think we've always talked about sides that when Bremen were in the relegation battle a few weeks ago, we said, oh, well, they're playing really well. And I think the difference is now, as the form shows, they are not just playing well, they're getting the results as well. I actually think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, they're now closer to a Champions League spot than they are to relegation. Which I think is hilarious. I mean, you're welcome to fact check me on that, but I'm pretty sure they are. And that says a lot about their form and about how much they've improved. I think when Frankfurt equalised, there was a certain moment where I think a Bremen of previous seasons would have crumbled or would have succumbed to the fact that they had thrown away a lead. But this Bremen didn't. This Bremen went back after the game and they kept going and got a winner, which I think they deserved, albeit from a terrible goalkeeping error from Lukas Radetzky. But that shows to me that this is a different Werder Bremen. They didn't just say, oh, well, we've conceded one against Frankfurt, they'll probably go and win now because they're the better team. Yuri Pavlenko made some very good saves and one of their underrated players of the season.
He's one of the underrated goalkeepers in the league.
Absolutely. But players that haven't been amazing sort of stepping up and performing. I mean, we know that Delaney has been good. Janusevic was good. His form has been a bit patchy, but Belfodil in the last few weeks has suddenly looked like a new striker. And I think that...
Man of the match against Augsburg last week.
Yeah, absolutely.
Week,
that comes impressive. Down to the coach. I know that it's the players who are doing the job, but they've got much more of a system and they've got much more of a fight to them. They definitely look like a different Werder Bremen to the one of a few months ago. And whatever he's changed, or if he has, it's working.
Yeah. So are we supposed to buy into this, though? Because, I mean, it seems like there's been three of the last four seasons, Werder Bremen has had a really tough start to the season. And then they either shoot up to seventh or eighth, or it's basically somewhere in mid-table. Do you see anything different this time around? Or do we have to also proceed with cautious optimism, considering that they still only have a coach that signed until the end of the season, and they don't seem to have a real replacement, a long-term replacement for the guy who's going to be in charge?
Yeah, as impressive as the recent performances have been, and I think, yeah, like I said, those two recent ones against Augsburg away, where they're outstanding, and putting two past an Eintracht Frankfurt side, which is, I believe, still the second best defence in the league. Hugely impressive performances, leaves them, yeah, equidistant between the relegation and the Champions League places now.
Equidistant, okay.
Yeah, not quite, John, but I had an extra minute to fact check.
There you go. Still, equidistant.
But, yeah, for me, it'd still be a case of proceed with caution, because I think even just after the appointment of Florian Kohfeldt, I think we said that, you know, we can't be there expecting too much. I think he's been impressive so far, but there is a danger of them following a similar pattern that we saw, first of
Absolutely.
All, with Alexander Nuri at Bremen.
Even Skripnik before him.
Yeah, Skripnik before him, and Andre Schubert as well, at Gladbach is another similar case. Fantastic so far. Deserve all the praise that comes their way. But yeah, still proceed with caution. Are they in a position to build on this under Kohfeldt? Kohfeldt showed that he can do it this one season. Now he has to show that he can consolidate that, build on it, and turn Werder Bremen into the club which they expect themselves to be, as in they would see themselves as a top six, seven German team.
But don't raise those expectations too quickly, because obviously that's what broke the club in the past. You know, they expected Nuri, after saving them and then nearly getting them into Europe, to suddenly get them into Europe the next season.
And how many top German teams does that apply to?
Absolutely. And too many of them fall into, I mean, Cologne. Look at Cologne. Best example. Just can't do that. You have to take it slower.
No, let me ask, because as opposed to last season, to my knowledge, Florian Kohfeldt has not received a contract extension beyond the season. So what do you think Werder Bremen should do?
Well, Bremen will do what they've done in the past, and they will.
Do you expect him to do that?
Oh, they will extend with him. My fear is that, as Matt just mentioned, that they'll go into the new season, and if he doesn't win in the first 8 games or 10 games, that they'll sack him. That's not necessarily a sustainable way. Well, it's not necessarily. It's not a sustainable way to move the club forward. If you want your club to play a certain type of football, or you want them to have a certain identity, which I think Werder Bremen quite clearly do, they want to be a top six side, they want to get back into Europe, they want to stabilise themselves as that grand old club in the north that they are, or they believe they are, then you have to give a coach time, you have to allow something to develop. And I think that might take 2 or 3 seasons. That might take a bit of patience. It might not be consolidation all the time. You know, it might be a little bit down here at the relegation, and then you might just survive. But then next season is mid-table, and then the next season is another mid-table. And then you're starting to think, okay, maybe now we can go to top six. You know, like Cologne did before they got all excited, got into Europe, and then thought, oh, we're Cologne, we're going to win it next year. And now look at them. And Matt's right. How many clubs in the Bundesliga have been affected by the giddy heights that they suddenly find themselves in, and then raising the expectation to levels that the club just can't sustain?
Just before Kohfeldt took over, there were admittedly very, very tentative rumours that Bremen were actually interested in bringing Thomas Tuchel, weren't there?
Very much
over-optimistic, and very, very tentative. But I think there is evidence, there is some ambition there to do something like that. And the only problem I have with that now is, I'm not suggesting for a moment that Tuchel would go anywhere near it, or would have, or ever will. But there is some ambition there. But I wonder now if they want to act on that ambition. And that may be the case, because, like you said, Davis, they've not offered Kohfeldt a permanent contract yet. They're going to be entering into a coaching market which, given that both Bayern and Dortmund are on the lookout, and potentially movements at Hoffenheim or Red Bull as well, it's pretty saturated and pretty difficult at the moment. Would they potentially be interested in a Lucien Favre-type figure? Or a Nagelsmann? I'm sure they would like to see themselves in that sort of market. I wonder if they're able to compete on that, or perhaps maybe they should have made some move last season when there were these rumours. Because as it is, they run the danger of being unable to compete, unable to bring in a manager of the calibre which they believe should be able to take Bremen onto the next level, and then find themselves back again in this vicious circle of, young and experienced coach, and it happens to be Kohfeldt here, but like I said, it could have been various others throughout the Bundesliga.
Yeah, or Skripnik, yeah.
Yeah, and are they going to follow follow this pattern again? It'd be interesting. I would, as much as it's a risk, I would like to see them show some ambition, put the cards on the table, go for it, go for a name, go for a Nagelsmann.
It'd be interesting, though, because
put themselves into the fray.
You talk about Nagelsmann there, and it'd be interesting. We talked about how well he'd fit Leipzig, for example, but imagine him taking over Werder Bremen, and if you said, right, okay, here's a budget. What you're giving someone like that is you're giving him one of the biggest clubs in Germany. And it's interesting, I wonder whether that would resonate enough with some of the best names in the game these days, in terms of young managers who've made a name for themselves already. I mean, it worked with Tedesco, right? Schalke are a huge name. Werder Bremen are a huge name. And yet, is Leipzig more appealing because of the financial benefits, because of the squad quality? Because right now...
The presence of Ralf Rangnick, I would think would be the main attraction.
The relationship with him, absolutely.
Do you still think that Werder Bremen is on the same notoriety as Schalke, though?
Absolutely.
Schalke, yeah.
In this day and age?
In terms of name, tradition, size of club.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
well, definitely in those factors.
On the pitch, nowhere near.
Not on the pitch,
or
no.
Even in the boardroom.
No, but we're not talking about in terms of the size of the club. You know, Werder Bremen are a huge, huge team in Germany. They have one of the most famous stadiums, they were in the Champions League for
Champions
a number of
relatively
seasons.
Relatively recently.
Yeah, absolutely. And they were in the Champions League for a number of years. They were Germany's team in the Champions League for a number of years, and a not too distant past.
Just a decade ago.
And yet now it's easy to forget all of those things, but I think there is a strong foundation there, and I think Matt makes a really good point. Maybe it's time that they just threw their hat in the ring and said, you know, look, let's go for it, let's push on. And if they're not sure about Kofeld, then maybe they should try and get someone bigger. But it would be a very brave step, and German clubs outside of the top four, well, actually outside of Bayern, tend to act with a small C when it comes to moves like that.
Yeah, very, very small conservative C.
I'm also curious because I look at Bremen's squad right now. I have it up on my
It's not that great.
Yeah, that's the thing, right?
All the more credit to Kofeld.
Yeah, absolutely. Right,
definitely. But you also think of not just what their plans are in terms of a coaching sense, but also just in a general football sense. I mean, how many long-term solutions do they really have in their squad? I mean, I can really think of Max Eggestein, who comes from their mm-hmm. academy system, and his brother, Jonathan Eggestein, who is still in the Germany setup as well, and was rumored to go to Bayern at one point in their youth setup, and then you have Augustinsson, who they purchased last year. But you can't reasonably expect them to keep players like Max Kruse, keep players like Milos Veljkovic, who is having an above average season, but if you just look at his quality and his age.
Well, the front three against Frankfurt, Junusovic, Kruse, Belfodil, 30, 29.
Right.
As impressive as it's been.
And
yeah.
Junusovic is out of contract. So you also have to consider what this club thinks of in terms of long term, in terms of a personnel.
But if they do it right, they can be an attraction. And exactly. if you're a player,
and Thomas Delaney
if the conditions are right, would you rather go to Zinsheim on the edge of the A6 motorway in the middle of all the vineyards in the middle of nowhere, or would you rather play for Werder Bremen in one of the most beautiful cities
in
Germany?
In a stadium right by the river.
Do you have confidence that they can sell that to somebody though? Not just coaches too.
They've not shown it in the past 10 years, but the conditions are there.
Because they're still attracting players like Isak Belfodil, who until a few weeks ago was basically just a player who would get garbage minutes.
Yeah,
well, they attracted Serge Gnabry.
But they got Gnabry not so long ago. And they do have, I mean, I'm a big fan of Thomas Delaney in midfield. And I think if they can build a team around him, including Kruse in the twilight years that he's still got,
Do you think Max Kruse is in his twilight years? He's 28 years old.
He feels like he's on the trajectory on the way down in terms of he's not going to be in the Germany team.
Do you think he'll get another chance somewhere else?
No, he's 30, right?
He's 30 now. Excuse me.
You've still got a couple more years left in him, right? But if 2 more years is a long time in football if you're going to squad plan. So use Kruse as the guy up front. You've still got Florian Kainz, who's pretty decent out wide.
But again, a flyer from the Austrian Bundesliga.
Absolutely, yeah, but this is the world that Werder Bremen are operating in. So you've got a few of these okay, above average players. You've got Delaney as your central midfield solid man. You've got Kruse up top. You're working on the defence, but you've got a good goalie. Matt's right. If you approach that summer correctly, get the right coach and spend some money, you can start putting together the pieces that are missing in those key areas. And then suddenly you are looking like a top six side. It might take a couple of seasons, but if you only have 2 or 3 seasons of Max Kruse's best years left, use that time now. Don't wait.
All right. That'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can follow Matt Ford at Matt_4D. Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2 2's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_FanOptra. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Borussia Dortmund's 6-0 loss in Munich was their worst loss since February 23rd, 1991, when they lost 7-0 to Stuttgart. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.